Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. Gosh, I've got so much to tell you about, haven't I, this week? First of all, I thought it was just great that there was that article this week in the press that for once told it like it is. I was really surprised. I mean, you've probably heard me, if you listen to this podcast, you will have heard me say just a ton of times how frustrated I get that, you know, all of these articles that alcohol is good for you, and one glass of red wine is good for the heart. You know, no, it isn't. Have a grape. I used to love those. They used to kind of keep me going and keep me inspired that I was doing absolutely the right thing to keep drinking. And it was very rare that you saw an article that actually told it like it is. And if you did, it would usually have a kind of caveat saying, however, researchers have found that, you know, this isn't the case and that alcohol doesn't increase cancer risk or whatever, you know, they would come out with. But this one that came out this week, I forget who did the actual study. I might be able to see it if I've got the press in front of me. Yeah, it was the University of California. And it basically says quite clearly that literally one alcoholic drink is enough to raise the risk of suffering and a regular heartbeat. And they say around 1.4 million people in the UK have a particular type of irregular heartbeat. And it gives the medical name and it says it can be triggered by too much alcohol. And people often suffer holiday heart syndrome after overindulging. But now they're saying just a small amount of alcohol can bring on this episode. I mean, that, you know, that's scary. How scary is that? And when I posted this on the Sober Club, you know, a few people kind of posted back and said, you know what, I used to notice this happening. I used to actually notice this irregular heartbeat after I'd been drinking. And I you know, I didn't think anything of it. Wow, not much. I mean, God, it's scary when you see it written like that. But, you know, of course, we all know this to be true. There are no health benefits of alcohol. It's incredible that we still, you know, people are still constantly trying to pull the wool over our eyes and glamorize it all. Again, I know I've said it before, but I bought a birthday card for my son. My oldest son was 23 last week. I know, wow, where did those years go? And again, I had that same thing of trying to buy a birthday card that didn't contain images of booze and, you know, oh, it's your day, you can get smashed kind of message. You know, it was really difficult to find a decent birthday card that didn't portray all of that. Anyways, what else can I tell you? Oh, yeah, the really amazing news that I kind of lose track of dates and times at the moment. I don't know if anyone else is like me, but ever since the first lockdown, I haven't had any concept of time, of dates. I keep kind of forgetting what date it is. But anyways, next Tuesday, the Sober Club is 2. I can't believe it. It's incredible how that time has, well, in one ways seemed like forever because of lockdown, but in other ways gone really quickly. So yeah, the Sober Club is 2 years old, and it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life is create this group, which is very small. It is not, you know, a massive, hugely successful, big money making exercise. It's very small, but I really have a belief that the right people will come and be members of the Sober Club. We've got lots of blogs and competitions and all sorts of stuff. It's a platform to raise awareness of what I, you know, consider to be the most important message, which is this positive message around choosing to be alcohol free in a totally non-judgmental way. And then we have our membership part of it where people pay a small monthly fee and they have a huge amount of support and inspiration and content and encouragement and guest experts. And of course, it includes our online course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. I'm really proud of it. And the people who are make up the Sober Club are just absolute superstars. They really are. And we do genuinely have people on day one and people who are, you know, going around the block a few times. And then we have people who are 5 years sober and everything in between. And it's a magical mix of people sharing their experiences, giving back. And it's so much more than just not drinking. It's the fact that the not drinking underpins everything else. And there's this amazing sense of how can I optimize my life? How can I optimize my emotional well-being? And that's what's just, you know, been so fantastic about this group. So anyways, to that end, I thought it'd be really nice to bring you a few little short interviews with a few members and share a few stories of you know, what's happened for them. So over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to share a few stories from Sober Club members. You know, you'll get to hear them just talking about what's changed in their life, what benefits they've found, maybe what challenges they've had, because this stuff really is different for everyone. You know, it really does depend on your circumstances. We don't all go through the same things. But having said that, there's very much shared experiences too. And that's where the magic comes in, because, you know, it's amazing to be able to log on to a group and just say, listen, I'm having this thing going on with me. You know, does that sound right to you? Is it okay? Because I'm concerned about it. And then somebody else will say, it's all good. I had that too. So this week I'm bringing you a little interview with Leslie Hosner, who is one of our Sober Club members, sharing her story. And then a little bit later on, because, you know, there's all these terms, isn't there, around sobriety, you know, the word sober, of course. Teetotal is another one. That's not a word I've ever kind of really used, because I think of it as, well, I don't only drink tea, so I'm not teetotal. You know, I drink other drinks. but it does get me thinking about tea. So I thought, let's have a chat about tea, because I'm quite a big coffee drinker, although I don't overdo it. I do have an off switch. But I like my tea as well. But I've never really been the kind of person that's properly got into this kind of ritual of tea and all the ins and outs of how amazing tea can be. So I came across Jing, who are this fabulous brand who literally do care about the provenance of tea, but also they're kind of dipping their toes now into the alcohol-free market, if you like, with this amazing sparkling tea. So I thought let's chat to them and find out a little bit more about it. So if you are a tea lover, you're going to absolutely love my interview with Felicity from Jing. But right now, let's hear from Leslie. It's so lovely to interview members of the Sober Club, and I've known Leslie Hosner for a little while now, and I thought it'd just be lovely to hear your story, Leslie, and just see what's changed for you, you know, in your time since ditching the booze. And, you know, I think it's always really interesting because people have different challenges and different benefits, don't they? So anyways, take us back. Tell us about the old days. Tell us a little bit about your story.
The old days. Well, I've been thinking about stopping drinking for a long, long time. In fact, I can remember once before I went to a big work conference. I only remembered this last week. I went to a hypnotherapist and I said, I want to be hypnotized to not drink so much, but don't hypnotize me to stop. Let's just stop at two glasses or something. So I knew it had to stop, but I wasn't ready to go completely the full way. So I've been drinking since I was about 14, I say. So it's been a long, long time. And I was always the last one to stop, really. I hate to use the word social drinking now, but I drank when I was out. I drank in company mostly, and I used to find lots of possibilities for having social events. And then about 10 years ago, I got a job that was involved an awful lot of meetings and drinking and going to the pub at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and sort of staying there, traveling a lot around the world. And there was always alcohol involved. And if you weren't in the pub, you didn't know what was going on.
Right, that's so interesting, isn't it? It's interesting how certain industries, certain jobs are so linked to alcohol.
Yeah, it was a union organisation and it was a seafaring organisation. So, you know, put the two together and there was a lot of drinking. But a lot of the women were uncomfortable. They did know that it was unfair on the women sometimes, because the men would be there till 3-4 o'clock in the morning and then they'd turn up. And we all knew it wasn't good for us. Anyway, I left the job about 4 years ago, and it still took me a while. I was still going out with my friends, and I would be always the one at book club that finished the bottle or sat next to the bottle so that, you know, I could help myself and what have you. And then I went on a retreat, actually with Sarah Leather, who's one of our Sober Club members. She ran the retreat. And I thought, oh, well, this is a great, you know, it's a well-being and business retreat. This will be a great opportunity to have a few days without the booze. Of course, I found the other members who were drinking, and we spent a couple of evenings in the bar finding drinks. And I totally spoiled 2 days by not feeling my best in the morning. And at the end of that, I travelled. I had a day in Faro on my own. I had a couple of glasses at lunchtime. I went to the bar on the way home at the airport. I used to quite enjoy sitting in a bar on my own and having a nice glass of red. And that was the last of my red wine drinking days. And we'd done an exercise on the beach. And I remembered that actually this week, where Sarah had drawn a line in the sand and we stepped over it. So it was very, very physical, but very metaphorical. And I said, I'm drawing a line under this. You know how you do. And stepped over it. So that was the end of the wine drinking. But then I would occasionally have a glass of Prosecco when I was out with friends, or when I went to Russia with my sister. Of course, you had to try the vodka and the odd glass of beer. But because that wasn't my tipple of choice, it didn't seem such a problem. And then I joined the Sober Club, and I think I must be the only member who doesn't have a number, because I knew exactly when I stopped drinking the red wine, which had been the problem, but I hadn't stopped the odd, you know, Prosecco or champagne.
Why did you join then? Because I'm always interested in whether people have this sort of feeling of, you know, because I mean, I genuinely believe that if alcohol isn't a problem for you, you know, it isn't a problem. You know, there are some people you know, they absolutely have an off switch and they wouldn't even think of it. It must have still been in your mind.
Oh, all the time, because when you only drink on certain occasions, you have to think about getting to those certain occasions. It's like being a secret smoker. I did that for a while as well. I'd stop smoking, but there were one or two people that I would maybe have a sneaky cigarette with. So it was it's very much the grey area drinking. So what I did was, I started listening to your podcasts. I came to an event when you did the TED Talk. And that resonated so much. And I thought, yes, I'm going to join this. And because you said it doesn't matter if you're just sober curious, it doesn't matter, you know, it's not AA, you don't have to come and admit if you've had the odd drink. So I thought, this is the place for me. So I surrounded myself with lots of Quitlet. I listened to the podcasts and the chats. I mean, just listening to other people's stories really, really resonated. But I didn't feel like I'd got a problem. And then I went to a Champneys retreat. And I thought, these people, they've done so well. They're mostly women, as you know. They've really cracked it, and they're feeling so good. And I thought, I know I don't have a problem with having the odd drink, but then I thought, why do I? You know, why don't I just say, yes, I'm sober as well? So it was totally the element that stopped me drinking completely, and now I decided, and I've made friends who are fun and sober.
It's really interesting. I love this story because it's quite different, isn't it, to most people's stories? So it's really interesting. So would you say then, when you
Can
you still hear me?
Yes, my internet has been rubbish today.
Oh, no worries. Sorry. So when you were in your stage then that you said, obviously you'd stopped the red wine, which was, in inverted commas, the problem.
Frozen again.
Oh, no. Okay, you hear me now?
Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah.
All right. So you'd stopped the red wine, which was the problem, in inverted commas, for you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And we know that. And yet you were still drinking occasionally or drinking different mm-hmm. drinks. Mm. And that was obviously, it was obviously on your mind.
Yes.
Something about that was on your mind. Otherwise you wouldn't have come to that event, would you?
No, exactly. And I definitely had an effect, a big effect from drinking those other things.
Right. Okay. So you weren't feeling 100%. You weren't feeling great.
No. Because I, you know, if I had one Prosecco, I wouldn't have one anyway. I would have three or four.
Right. Okay. So you were noticing that the same habits were building up. Okay. Got it.
Yes. And I knew that would happen. So that's why talking to the others and doing all the exercises on the retreat, I thought, you know, why don't I just own it and stop it.
It's really interesting. Carry on.
No, I was just going to say, I just wish I had a number because I want to celebrate numbers like everybody. Maybe I will pick a date that the penny dropped and have that as my number. Mm.
I mean, I think the really interesting piece of this is there was, I'm guessing that there was a real stubbornness there for you, that you were sort of almost, you know, almost this thing, I don't need to do this. No one's going to bloody well tell me what to do. I'm in control. I bet there was some of that going on because it wasn't with me for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it wasn't what I saw as the baddie, which was the red wine, which was where there was no off switch. And it made me feel, I was getting such headaches in the morning. You know, as you get older, it gets worse and worse. Mm. You don't throw up, but you get headaches. And it's obviously not doing me any good. And I'd read so many books and listened to so many podcasts.
Mm. Yeah, amazing. So then when you did finally make this decision then, even though for you it was more of a sort of, well, why don't I? You know, it was almost a case of, well, you know, I've got nothing to lose, because you certainly have got, and didn't have anything to lose, right?
No. And I wanted to feel as well as I possibly could. I'm very, and I think the pandemic has brought that to a head as well.
Yeah.
I just want to have the best possible health for as long as possible.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really interesting because I think some people come to this decision because they've got to get away from, in inverted commas, you know, they need to get away from the feeling really, really terrible or the problems they've got or whatever it might be. Mm. But for other people, and it sounds like for you, when you came to that realization, it wasn't so much a getting away from, it was a, what can I move towards? How much better is life going to be?
Yeah, no. there's a lot of that. But there's also, I've got a member of my family who struggles, and I wanted to be a good example, a better example. Yeah. And to be honest, almost, we used to have some boozy Sunday lunches as a family and Christmas and everything. And that just doesn't happen anymore. Hardly anybody drinks. Mm. And also the amazing beers you can get.
The alcohol-free drinks.
Has made a huge difference.
Yeah, it really absolutely. Has.
And finding kombucha and other alternatives, it's made. So my husband hardly ever drinks. Mm. In fact, he hasn't had a drink for a long time.
Great.
So, and we can go places and not even have to think about driving. And
yeah, exactly. You know, it gives you an amazing freedom, doesn't it?
And I'm not a bad example to my grandchildren. I mean, I think I've heard you say this. I've been a bad example to my children. I don't want to perpetuate that with the grandchildren as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to be drunken nanny. I mean, the older ones did see me worse for wear, I think. But, you know, hey.
What were the benefits that you noticed then? I mean, obviously, you know, again, for you, this is a different sort of story, because often, you know, people have been, you know, drinking forever and a day, and then they reach a point and they stop, and that's it, when it finally is it. You know, often people go around the block a few times, of course, but then when it finally is it, they, you know, and then we have this chat and we'll be saying, okay, I'm however many days or months or years, and so I can absolutely chart the difference. So
with you, with it being a little bit more subtle, because it was, you know, you weren't drinking so much, or it wasn't the drink that you allegedly had the problem. When did you notice, if you can remember, or what did you notice that was different?
Totally not having the red wine, I had no more headaches. I can't even remember the last time I had a headache. And I hate headaches, so that was a big driver. Sleep. I sleep a lot now. And I've always eaten well, but I think I probably eat better and exercise more, because I know I can go to a gym class in the morning and not have to cancel it because I don't feel like it.
Yeah. And what about your emotional well-being? How do you think that changed when you'd finally made this decision? You know, I may as well be alcohol free.
I mean, that's reasonably early days, I suppose, but I think it's getting better. I'm much more aware of my feelings. And I know you've said, you feel things more deeply because you're not.
Well, you have to feel all the feels, don't you?
Yeah. So I am noticing that, and things happen. You know, things happen. But I know I'm dealing with things from a rational standpoint, and it's not just me being out of control or passing out because of the drink or whatever. I mean, I didn't drink all the time, but that job was very boozy, and I think the hardest thing has been I don't cope very well with friends' reactions. I'm still, you know.
Is that because there would still be this expectation that, oh, Leslie's the party girl?
There's a bit of that, but they always have to mention it. You know, even after 2 years at my book club, they still mention it. And I think, well, get over it. I don't ask what's in your glass.
I think you're probably shining a light on other people's behaviour, right?
I know I am. And I never do. I never say, well, you shouldn't be drinking that or whatever. But So I think that's something I'm working on. And I smile and I bring my own drink. And, you know, there was one occasion recently, a friend said, oh, you're not drinking tonight. And I said, oh, yes, I'm really thirsty.
Yeah, exactly. Of course I'm drinking. Yeah. Just not poison.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I try not. I mean, I used to help people stop smoking. So I try not. I don't force it down people's throats. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, obviously, I'd rather they didn't drink because it's not doing them any good. But it's not for me to tell them don't drink. But if they're interested, I think some of them are interested.
So that's interesting, you know, that you used to work with people around smoking addiction. That's an interesting one. I mean, have you seen, you know, in your time working in that area then, a definite link between people who smoke and drink?
I think there's similarities in the character. You know, they tend to be sort of risk takers and party people, maybe. And also there's a willingness not to look at how much you're spending on it or what it's doing to you until you've got that niggling thought in the back of your head that you want to stop doing it. I did sometimes have people come to me who were drinkers and they struggled to give up smoking. And I just said to them, look, if it's got to be a choice, then smoke, because the drink will change your behaviour. It'll wreck your life.
Right.
But, you know, if you can't cope without the smoking, then do that and cut it down. Do whatever you can. But absolutely, the alcohol is what's going to wreck their marriage, what's going to, you know, it's going to change their behaviour.
While you were doing that work, presumably you were still drinking, but not too much.
Yeah, not very much at that stage, because I wasn't in a job. I never saw anybody apart from people with their eyes shut. No, so I wasn't drinking as often. Just you know, on nights out or something. No, it didn't occur as a problem then.
When you talk about, you know, you're talking about jobs, these sort of high pressure jobs. What would be your tips, if any, for anyone who's going through that? You know, someone who maybe it's even a relatively new job for them and they can sense this pressure to drink.
if it's a new job, I would walk in at day one and just say I don't drink. I mean, there were quite a few people in the organisation who had obviously had a big problem and stopped, and everybody respected that. And actually, what I would say is, it doesn't matter to other people so much.
Once it does.
If they see you as a non-drinker, that's it. They accept it. It's harder once you're established in the gang or the drinking pool or whatever to turn around and leave the gang and stop.
Yeah.
So I would say establish yourself as a moderate drinker or non-drinker as soon as you can, and just don't make an issue of it.
Yeah, I think the more we stand in our own sort of authenticity, the easier it is, really. Yeah. It's when we go in and with that, oh well, I'm actually not drinking tonight, as soon as they can get in there with, oh go on, just have one, then it makes it so much harder.
They actually used to call me just the one. That was my nickname.
Did they?
Yeah. And it never was. Yeah, because they knew they could always do. And I mean, I'm quite funny without it. So, but I was obviously funnier with it.
Well, maybe you were, maybe you weren't.
Maybe not. No. Yeah.
It's interesting how we have this perception of ourselves as being fantastic, fun party people. In fact, I think there was a thread in the Sober Club recently, wasn't there? Where it wasn't you talking about sober dancing and you're saying you're a great dancer.
Oh, I know I wasn't. I'm not a very good dancer. I'm quite inhibited, but I generally don't get up. But I'm going to learn to do it. So I'm going to learn to get up without a drink and enjoy it. But it's been great in the club meeting so many other women who've ditched the booze and are just loving what's on the other side.
Yeah, that is it, isn't it? It's that amazing.
Yeah,
it's the way the world opens up for you. That's the bit that I think is, you know, if I could bottle that, it's almost like I have no idea that this whole other world existed.
Yes.
I mean, no idea.
No.
It's incredible. And for some people, I mean, obviously I was already in the field of sort of optimum health and well-being. It was already what I did.
Yeah.
But even for me, it's opened up massively. But when I see the way it opens up for so many people, it's just magical. And when you're stuck in that drinking cycle, you've got no idea what might be there for you, and not just in terms of feeling better physically and emotionally, but changing your life. That's what's really amazing, isn't it?
There's so much time. I mean, I used to waste so much time, because if you were going out on a Saturday night, you wouldn't put anything in on the Sunday just in case you felt rubbish. Yeah. I mean, and I still hear people saying, I'm not feeling up to it today. Oh, I've got a hangover. I'm not doing anything. I'm just having a duvet day. And I'm thinking, but life's too short.
What a waste. What a waste. Absolutely.
So much to do.
And what have been the sort of personal benefits for you then? What have you found has changed? I mean, you already said you know you can be present for your grandchildren, which is amazing.
Yeah. I'm very proud of myself, because I didn't think I'd achieve it. I you know, and looking back, I sort of think, oh, that was dead easy. It was really easy. And it was easy. And yet the thought of it, the fear of it, was probably much harder than the actual not drinking.
Mm.
And I can remember as about when I was 14 or 15 or whatever, I didn't like the taste. And I thought, how am I going to learn to like something? And then I did. It's like smoking. I didn't like the taste of smoking, but you do it because it makes you look grown up. I was quite insecure and, you know, there's all the therapy to go into why we drink. Mm. But I'm working in a union organisation. I'm a bit of a campaigner, and I get quite, I've got a real strong sense of justice and what's right and what's not fair. And I think the way that alcohol is portrayed is just such a big lie, and it's so unfair on people. And
it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
people. It is the way it's been glamorized. Yeah. The alcohol marketing industry. I mean, they're masters at persuasion and just doing the most fantastic job of convincing literally everyone that this is the done thing, and yet the emperor isn't actually wearing any clothes.
No, it's exactly that. It's the emperor's got no clothes, and when will they wake up to it? I wonder. Mm. I just know so many young women who are drinking lots and lots, and some of them can moderate. And, you know, and they stop when they don't feel too good. But I don't know what the proportion is of people who will not be able to stop.
Mm. I think another really interesting thing is, you know, when we're saying about, you know, you'd stopped your red wine, which was the big problem, but then you were just, you know, having whatever, a Prosecco or whatever it was.
Yeah, or beer.
So at that point, you know, it might be that you might have classed yourself a mindful drinker, you know, or a moderate drinker. But then I always think, what happens then if something else happens in your life? Because I think it just takes something else to tip up. And this is what we hear, isn't it? You know, because most of us, when we're using, in inverted commas, alcohol, because it relaxes us, or we're using it because it cheers us up. You know, it's that thing of, oh, I've had a really busy day. Oh God, I need a drink, you know, or I'm really upset about something. I need a drink. Or, oh, I'm celebrating. I need a drink. It allegedly is the answer for all of these, you know, all of this stuff. And the minute it's the answer, it's the emotional response.
Yes.
You know, you've got a problem because those things will crop up in your life and they will be amplified. There will be grief. At some point, there will be, you know, issues, problems, distress, celebrations, obviously.
Yeah.
And the amount of alcohol will ramp up.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I was more of a celebration person than going to it when I had a problem. But there may have been one or two occasions when I would have turned to it. But I didn't often drink at home unless there was somebody who'd already joined me in a bottle. Then I'd finish it and I might open another one. But I didn't often come home and open a bottle on my own. I was, this is why I don't like the idea of social drinking, but I would open a bottle of beer on my own. And now I will open a bottle of non-alcoholic beer. And enjoy it. I really, really am enjoying the flavours now. I suppose I started drinking beer in, I lived in Germany when I was 17, 18. So I got to learn to like beer there.
Right.
But it's so fattening. It's not great for the waistline in quantities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
I'm just saying the Prosecco thing. The non-alcoholic Proseccos really taste as good. I mean, Prosecco's not that great as a drink, actually. You know, it's nothing like wine.
No, absolutely. So to sum up then, what would be your top tip, you know, to anyone who might be feeling a little bit like you, you know, at the moment? Well, I haven't really got a problem, in inverted commas, and, you know, I'm not that bad. You know, I hear that people say that a lot, you know. And by the way, you know, I never try and sort of, I'm not up for prohibition. I think people have to make their choices. But what would you say to anyone who might be listening to this and kind of thinking, oh well, you know, I don't have a problem. I'm not that bad. I mostly can keep to a relatively small number, or I don't drink every day, or, you know, what would be your kind of message?
I'd probably say, if you're listening to this, then you're thinking about it. Once you've started on that route, you're going to get there. So why carry on? Because I would sort of look on it as a pair of scales. What are you getting from it?
Exactly.
And what would you get from not having it? And I would also say, read the science. I read William Porter, and there's another one, I can't remember the guy's name, called Alcohol Lied to Me.
Craig Beck,
Annie Grace. You know, they don't pull any punches. And look at the statistics. Is it actually serving you? And give it a try, you know. If you've done Dry January, you've done the heavy work anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, there really are zero benefits, as we say so often, zero benefits. You know, you say, look, it's a good way of talking about it, really. Look at it.
Yeah.
Look at it on the scales. You know, ask yourself, what is it giving me? The interesting thing is, most people, certainly I would have, if you'd asked me to do that, you know, sort of 4 years ago, my answer would have been, well, what's it giving me? Well, it's making me feel social. It makes me feel grown up. It makes me feel relaxed. And I'd go through this whole load of stuff. And then, if you then say, well, hold on, is that the wine? Is that the wine you're drinking? Doing that, or is it the associations of the social occasion? You know, how can it possibly be a liquid doing that? It's nonsense.
I mean, I look at how everything, the tables have turned with smoking. People would come to me and say, well, I'm just a social smoker, and I'd say, okay, so what is social about going
Smoke
over somebody?
I know, absolutely.
And you know, and then I'd say, and what about the dog's bottom mouth? That was that used to get them. It depends what their trigger points were. For some people, it was the money, and they'd never worked out that had they not smoked, they could have afforded a deposit on a house.
Well, that's another one with the alcohol, isn't it?
It's another alcohol thing.
It's great. Who was in the sober club recently who bought a camper van with the money she'd saved?
That is brilliant.
Yeah, actually, it's such a top tip to put aside the money you would have spent, preferably actual cash, so at least initially, so you can see it mount up, you know,
yeah,
and be super proud of yourself. That money would literally have been pissed away. How amazing that you've actually got it there.
Yeah. You know? And you know, and just be proud of yourself every day you do, every day you're not drinking. And if you have a slip up, it doesn't matter because you're still on the road. You know, you've made a decision. And if that thought's come into your head, you've started on that road towards not drinking and you'll thank yourself.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
How many people say they wish they'd done it soon? I've done it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
20, 30, 40 years ago. Yeah. I wish I'd known.
Yeah, then. It's so true. I mean, you never meet anyone who says, I really regret stopping drinking.
No.
You know, and it's not anything we ever regret, is it? There was a member, a sober club member this week who was getting married and was saying, and that was such a lovely post. You know, she was saying, well, you know, so if I, you know, one bit of me knows that if I do have a drink today, because it's a sort of expected that it's your wedding day and everyone will be saying, oh, come on, just have one celebratory drink, because God knows we can't celebrate without toxic liquid, right?
Yeah.
You know, if I do have that, you know, I've kind of let myself down. I'm going to have a hangover. I'm going to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And yet there's still this kind of pull, isn't it? And so many of us sort of said to her, listen, you know, you will not regret choosing to be fully present and toasting it with your alcohol-free fizz and having a fabulous day and being fully present. There's no way that you would wake up the next day going, oh my God, I so wish I'd drunk a load of Prosecco. It's just not going to happen, is it?
Exactly. And it's so great that there is an alternative, because I can remember going to business things and you'd be greeted at the door and it was either Prosecco or orange juice and a flute. Well, you know, who's going
to
choose
I think there's still a little bit of work to be done at conferences and business meetings, in fairness. But, you know, times are starting to change. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh,
it's lovely having you as a member of the club. And you know, it's just, I mean, I think, you know, we'd both agree that connection really does make a difference, doesn't it?
It really does. Because as I say, my friends, a lot of them don't get it. I mean, you know, they socialise at the weekends. They have a wine club and they, you know, they go and they taste different wines and things, or they go on gin tasting tours. So I'm not getting involved in that. So it's really good to have connection with new people who are as, you know, switched on and eager to do new things.
And it's exciting, isn't it?
Yes.
Seeing what happens in people's lives and how they change, you know. And it's great for me because I see people kind of join the club and they're often quite sort of fragile and they haven't got a lot going on necessarily in their life, and they're very nervous of what they're doing, you know.
But I think we are setting an example to other people. There's somebody in the sober club, and my cousin mentioned this club and that her friend was in it. And I said, oh, well, I'm in it as well, because she knew I wasn't drinking. And I think she'll be joining at some point. She's so so curious. Yeah.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much, Leslie. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, and I'm definitely staying because I get so much out of that.
Brilliant. Thank you.
See you soon. Take care.
So don't forget, you can join us in the Sober Club. It is just thesoberclub.com, and just have a look around, click on membership. We have some super exciting things going on, some great experts. On Tuesday, if you're listening to this podcast before Tuesday the 7th, it's our 2-year anniversary, as I say. So we've got special stuff going on for that as well. So join us before then, if that's of interest. As promised, let's talk tea.
We're talking all things tea, and I'm really pleased that my guest is Felicity Fowler, who is Head of Tea Experience. I hope I've got that right, at Jing Tea. Yeah. Felicity, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This brand, Jing Tea, oh man, I mean, it's like going into another whole world of stuff that I desperately need to know more about. Because I think that, you know, when you ditch the booze, the world opens up to you. And I've always been very much a coffee drinker, but I love my tea when I get it right. And the truth of it is, I haven't done enough kind of looking into it, to be honest. And then when I tried your amazing sparkling tea, which we can come on to later, it just got me thinking, hold on, there's so much more here that people would love to know about. So, well, let's start with just tell us, you know, a little bit about your job then. Tell us a little bit about Jing, and what do you do as the head of tea experience?
What do I do? Sure. Yeah. So Jing is we would call ourselves a single garden tea brand. Single garden tea is kind of almost exactly what it sounds like it is. It's taking single origin one step further. We will dive into the really specific gardens in Asia's kind of like most revered tea regions and find the master producers, the experts, the people who are making the best tasting teas in those individual gardens. And like my job, and actually kind of like the job of the brand really, is to share them as widely as possible. But why we do that and why we think that's exciting and kind of important is because like actually tea is like the second most drink in the world after water. But actually there's really like, it's really narrow in terms of what people are drinking, especially in the UK. Like we're really conditioned to drink kind of cheap dust tea bags. It's always black tea. Often we'll add milk and sugar. But actually there's 6 different types of tea. If you go to somewhere like China, there's something like more than 10,000 different varietals or different teas to try. And what that means is 10,000 different tastes, different places, like different experiences that you can have with tea. And as soon as people start diving into that and realize there's kind of, so much more than just your bog standard black tea.
I mean, things have changed in the UK, haven't they? I mean, certainly when I was younger, I mean, it really was just your breakfast tea. That was kind of it, you know. And then obviously we got a little bit more adventurous and you know, drank Earl Grey or Lady Grey. You know, we introduced a few new things. And obviously in more recent years, we've obviously got our herbal teas now, and we have our rooibos tea, and, you know, and so it goes on. So we've got a bit more adventurous. But are you saying that before you even get into your herbal teas, even when you're just talking about traditional tea, there are so many different varieties? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. Yes. And you say it's quite interesting to think about the fact that we're getting more adventurous, and for sure we are, especially with things like green teas and lots of like, there's been lots of kind of wellness information around tea that has helped that a lot. But actually when tea first came to the UK, we would have drank tea almost exclusively from China, and green teas and oolong teas would have been the teas that we were drinking, not the kind of chopped up black teas that we tend to drink now. But yeah, happily that's kind of changing a little bit now.
What's wrong with our kind of tea bags then? You know, you don't need to name any names, obviously, but what's gone wrong with the way we drink our tea from, as you say, sort of dusty tea bags?
I mean, what's gone wrong, like you say, and I never would name any names because it's not it's a sort of systemic problem. It's not kind of, you know, specific people or specific companies doing anything wrong. I mean, really what's happened is commoditization of tea. And what that means is that the price gets driven down, and that means the quality tends to go down. That means kind of quality of life for people producing tea. And I think that's been, well, we know that's been widely reported in certain regions in the press kind of regularly over the last few years. It basically means no money in the supply, low quality, no money in the supply chain. Mm. And limited future. It also means, like, I mean, people are much, much more aware of the environmental impact of agricultural products now as well. And again, if there's no money in the supply chain, then the agricultural practices also aren't going to necessarily be the best for the environment. Mm.
So from your perspective then, with Jingtea, I'm guessing you that sustainability is really important, and things are ethically sourced, and the fair trade part of it.
Exactly. It's a huge part of what we do. So in the last year, we made a commitment to make 80% of our teas, or at least 80% of our teas, organic, for really, really obvious reasons as to why that's, like, you know, that seems to be the only way to think about the sustainability of the agriculture at the moment. We work with all of our farmers and the people who are making the tea directly. So we build personal relationships. Pre-COVID, we would spend 3 to 4 months of the year in the tea gardens, always visiting kind of the, you know, in spring you go to Hangzhou and you go to the areas around China that are producing the best green teas. You go to Darjeeling to choose your first flush. You get to know the people who are making it. You get to see firsthand also the kind of conditions, the places, and, you know, how people are producing these things. And that's always actually been fundamental to what we've done, how we've approached tea sourcing.
So tell us some of the benefits then of good tea.
I mean, honestly, the number one is taste. Like, for sure, like, there's nothing more pleasurable than finding a tea that you really, really, really love. And since I got into tea, and I think actually you said earlier that, you know, we get more adventurous with Earl Grey or kind of Lapsang. Yeah. And that was exactly my journey. I grew up on breakfast tea. It was kind of really comforting. And I think that's something that's wonderful that we have in UK tea culture, is people's personal or kind of family connections with tea, and that moment of, like, oh, you know, that comfort, moment of comfort, and how many times we use that. And definitely when I went to university, I started drinking Lapsang and thought that was the most kind of sophisticated thing ever. And it wasn't until I was lucky enough to spend a couple of weeks in China after university and tried like a jasmine pearls tea, or a jasmine, like, dragon eye, sometimes they call it, tea, and realized kind of like, whoa, this is kind of nothing like I knew tea could be. And the more you dig, kind of you pull the thread of tea, you realize actually, wow, there's so many different types of tea, different flavors, different tastes. And they're interesting. It's a little bit like, and I think this is why tea often appeals to people who have given up alcohol, because it's similar to wine in terms of there's complexity, there's interest, there's, you know, different things you can do with it, different flavors to find. And I think that the biggest pleasure for me is throughout the day, not just drinking the same tea, but knowing throughout the day and throughout the seasons, actually, but knowing on a day like today, I mean, 1st of September, you'd hope it'd be slightly warmer, but it feels a little bit autumnal where I am. And it's diving back into that tea that's going to give me a slightly warming feeling. It's got a little bit of, you know, berry flavors, and I'm starting to get into that those kind of seasonal flavors. And yeah, I think kind of drinking tea that tastes wonderful and gives you that moment. That's also kind of, you know, really accessible in terms of price, really easy to make. You don't need any kind of fancy equipment or anything, but being able to have that moment of, amazing taste and kind of interest.
Yeah. But then we do hear of the health benefits, don't we? You know, with green tea obviously has been well documented as being very high in antioxidants, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And different types of tea have different health benefits. So you'll get different antioxidants due to how the leaves are processed in black tea compared to, say, green teas. And like, I don't really drink tea for health benefits. It's a kind of nice byproduct of what, happens to be good for me, something that I love. But if you did want to drink tea for health benefits, I would say drink a range of types is the best, kind of the best approach. Also, tea's hydrating. It's 98-99% water at the end of the day, so it's a good way also to keep ourselves
What about the caffeine element of green tea?
So all tea contains broadly the same amount of caffeine. You'll have like certain different types, and very specific ones will have some differentiation, but broadly all tea, whether it's black, green, white, will contain the same amount of caffeine. And that's something I think that people don't often realize. Often they'll think, oh, white tea, it's so light, it's delicate, it's, you know, it doesn't look like it should be kind of strong in caffeine, but no, they are all the same. Caffeine's not necessarily bad for you, it's just, I mean, everyone has their own kind of tolerance or caffeine half-life, how quickly it processes in the body. So certain people, I mean, I wouldn't drink tea, say, after, say, 5 p.m. Because it can keep you awake. But otherwise, it doesn't. I mean, tea contains around about half the amount, like a cup of tea, around about half the amount of caffeine than a cup of coffee. There's different ways you can kind of extract the caffeine as well. I mean, when you make a cup of tea, you put your leaves or your tea bag in a pot, you add your boiling water and you wait for the leaves to infuse. What's happening when the leaves are infusing is you're bringing out like a variety of different plant compounds, of which caffeine is one. So using cooler water or infusing your leaves for a shorter amount of time, or using a bigger leaf, so kind of whole leaf rather than chopped up, you'll get different extractions of caffeine. So if you didn't want caffeine, use cooler water or infuse your tea quickly.
And obviously when we talk about herbal teas, I mean, you know, we could just go on forever, couldn't we, with all the different amazing varieties.
Yes and I mean, like, we call them herbal teas, and like I definitely call them herbal teas, but they're not actually tea, because tea is everything that comes from this Camellia sinensis plant, whereas actually herbals tend to be dried fruits, dried spices, herbs, etc., which actually don't contain any caffeine at all. And lots of them contain their own health benefits and their other. Chamomile, for example, contains this natural muscle relaxant, which is why we like to drink it in the evenings. And
take
a similar approach in terms of looking for the people, for the master producers, for the individual gardens, the origins, the terroirs, the places that produce the very best of these herbals.
Right. So you literally have discovered, you know, makers who, you know, there's certain places you'd go for a specific type of tea and somewhere else for a different one. It's as literal as that, is it, when you're sourcing?
Absolutely. Often we'll stay, like, people will stay on site. There's always lots of dinners and lots of kind of lunches. Get to know these people. And like in some parts of Asia, so I'm thinking of, like, one of my favorite teas is a tea called Alishan, Alishan is the name of a national park in the south central Taiwan. Not a lot of people know that Taiwan is kind of produces some of the best teas in the world. It's a really has a huge density of high mountains, and it has the right kind of subtropical/tropical climate that makes it perfect for tea production. And we know, like, during the pandemic, I got to know very well over Zoom the couple and their family who produce the Alishan oolong tea that we source. Tom, who does all of our sourcing, has visited them on a number of occasions, and they would be really kind of typical of how we approach and how we kind of get to know the people, like understanding, like, why they made the decision to go organic, what are the challenges that they face, how can we support that, what challenges do they face being kind of Taiwanese tea producers, and looking at kind of how popular oolong's becoming in the West, and how can we help them talk their specific place, because you really can't get that taste from anywhere else in the world.
Right. That's interesting. And I'm guessing that you take part in, you know, tea ceremonies, you know, so that's sort of something slightly, you know, that kind of ritual experience of drinking tea.
Yeah, certainly. And I think kind of when we went into lockdown 18 months ago, or everyone started working from home, that was a really kind of important part of people's day, that, like, we heard from a lot of customers, actually, and a lot of people who were, like, investing in teaware and investing in that kind of, like, moment, and that kind of, you know, often it's, you know, offers you space away from a screen. And it's always kind of inspiring to think that a lot of that stems from literally thousands of years of history from China.
I mean, you sell on Jing Tea, sell, you know, lovely sort of pots and various things, don't you? So, I mean, is that what makes the difference, the fact that, you know, you're not just kind of chucking your tea bag in an old crack cup, you're actually making something of this? You know, how important is the teaware?
I think think that's an interesting question, because I think it depends on what you're looking for from your tea. Like, actually, our best selling piece of teaware, and the piece that I use all the time, is our teaware. And everything about the teaware is designed to make making loose tea really easy and quick. And really,
so it's a glass, like a glass cafetiere kind of thing, but for tea.
Exactly. It's so it looks really similar, but you don't plunge the lid because you never want to squeeze your tea leaves. Otherwise, you'll get kind of bitterness and tannin and things out of it. So actually, like, a lot of the ritual that we've designed is about making something really simple, really easy to replicate. And again, that's like what we want people to experience. Or kind of, you asked me what's the best thing about tea, like, how can we best give people the opportunity to find those amazing tastes? And that's by making it simple, by making sure that, kind of, you know, the equipment can go in the dishwasher, you can usually get easily get the leaves out afterwards. But by using glassware, I think that's where the ritual element comes in, because you can actually see the leaves, you can see them unfurling. If thinking about this Ali Shan tea, it's like some of the leaves will be 5, 6, 7, 8 centimeters long by the time.
Oh, wow.
And being able to see that in a pot and see that kind of, like, oh, this really is just a kind of pure dried leaf, massively adds to the experience.
Yeah, I can absolutely imagine that. I'm guessing that, you know, obviously you're aware that lots of people who choose not to drink alcohol are starting to love their kombucha, which of course is based on tea. So, you know, are there any teas that that you think work particularly well with kombucha?
I mean, it depends on all of the other, well, it depends on the type of sugar, it depends on your SCOBY, etc. But I have tried it. I have a couple of kombuchas of my own actually downstairs. I have tried it with a white tea called white peony, and that tends to work really well. And also, I've noticed that quite a few of the bottle brands that you get in, you can get in the supermarkets and in the shops, will use this white tea as well.
Right.
Tends to be quite light. It has a really nice thick structure though, so it, like, you haven't got too many flavors that are going to kind of overcrowd things. But also you get that really nice thick kind of tea texture. I think some of the darker kind of roasted oolongs will work really well, so teas from like the Wuyi Mountains, so Wuyi oolongs. There's another tea called Phoenix Honey Orchid, which has got kind of like a little bit of citrus, a little bit of kind of marmalade-y, but also kind of like really complex kind of sour plum flavors, this kind of thing, as well as these like slightly roasted notes, which I think will work. That's the one that I'm currently experimenting with that I'm hoping will work.
Great. And talking about that sort of sparkling effect, then you now have the, is it called the Jasmine Pearls sparkling tea? So yes. Tell us what, you know, what happened when you decided to come up with that.
What happened when we decided to come up with that? So this was, I think I sort of joked with Tom the other day, who kind of did all of the development work for the sparkling tea. It was a real labor of love. The idea is exactly like, people want to drink less alcohol. We want to drink less alcohol. You go to events, especially if you're kind of working, if you've got to drive home, or if you've got to be, you know, on form the next day, or even actually if you really want to have kind of good conversations and make connections with people, you don't necessarily want to drink. You don't want to drink. I mean, I'm sure your audience knows this kind of way better than me. You know, sparkling water can get quite boring. Orange juice, kind of soft drinks get way too sugary, and there's only so much you can drink. We knew that kind of interest, the complexity, the kind of amazing tastes of single garden tea. So there seemed like there was something in, like, how can you translate that into something that's going to be also suitable for this kind of celebratory or event occasion? And like, make something that you want to drink over a long period of time, make something that's going to have a similar complexity to wine, something that people can really dive into and think, you know, think about and, you know, be intrigued by. The major challenge with it was working out, how do you make something without sugar? So without, like, that's really, because like, everything we do is all about kind of like telling the stories of these places, these people who are making the tea, and showing the tastes to people and giving them that experience in the purest way possible. As soon as in anything, if we start adding sugar or adding lots of other ingredients, it masks that taste and you don't get that pure tea experience. So kind of the labor of love element, I think, was working out the very best way to capture the inner bottle, capture that flavor of Jasmine Pearls. And Jasmine Pearls is a green tea, so it's a spring picked, so like really fresh, like young green leaves that have been then scented naturally with jasmine flowers. And a natural scenting process means that you take your green tea and for a period of 5 nights you'll put the fresh buds and flowers of jasmine on top of the tea. In the morning you'd remove them, next night you put fresh ones on again, and over time the completely natural oil from the jasmine buds will infuse into the tea and you get naturally scented jasmine tea. Wow. So you've got these kind of like fresh green tea flavors merged with the like super aromatic sweet jasmine flavor. How can we preserve that in a bottle without kind of, yeah, adding sugar? And yeah, eventually Tom kind of, after a lot of experimentation, I think he got his own kind of like pasteurization machines and all of these things. We had this kind of small, yeah, creative area in the office where everything was done in miniature until we eventually cracked the recipe, cracked this idea of cold infusing the tea. So using just cold water rather than, you know, normally with tea we
boil
use
it, yeah,
in the heat. Kind of extracts the flavors quite quickly. If you use cold water, you extract the flavors much, much more slowly. You'll also extract a different composition of the plant compound, so you won't get quite the same texture, or like you won't get the same flavors coming. Like you'll get the same flavors because it's obviously ultimately the same compounds, but in a different concentration coming out. So cold infusing the teas and then having a delicate carbonation. So if it was like, what you don't want again is like something that's kind of shoot up your nose and that you can't drink too much of, but that delicate carbonation certainly helps bring the sweet jasmine aromas to the nose and also kind of adds that kind of refreshing feeling without
being overwhelming. Yeah, you must be really pleased because it's such a unique product. It looks lovely and it's, you know, gorgeous bottle, and you know, you have that in a champagne glass. It really annoys me that glasses are called by names of alcoholic drinks, but anyway, for now we all know what we're talking about, a champagne glass. You know, you pour it into that and it's just absolutely perfect, and as you say, completely alcohol free, you know, no sugar in there either, like super good for you and really celebratory. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really inclusive as well. I think, again, when you're drinking, when you're not drinking and other people are drinking, it kind of like you can often really stand out if you've got, you know, some big, you know, pint of orange juice or, you know, lemonade or whatever. And actually having something that looks similar that you can, you know, it really blends in. And I think that's so much more inclusive.
Yeah. So what else have you got lined up for the future then with Jing Tea? What's on the horizon?
What's on the horizon? I mean, we're always looking for new teas. Tea is very seasonal. So spring is like the very big tea season. And then like certain areas will have big things in summer. Going into autumn, it's a big season for oolong teas. So this category that I keep talking about, which is a category that sits in between green and black. So green tea, like all tea comes from this Camellia sinensis plant. And technically I could have this Camellia sinensis plant in my garden and make all these different types of tea. Green tea basically is leaves that have been picked and then quickly heated up to lock them in that green state. Mm-hmm. Black tea is tea leaves that have been picked and then like kind of rolled or bruised. Oxygen gets in, changes the enzymes, oxidizes them, and that they go from being this green color to this kind of rich, concentrated, dark, reddy brown color. Oolong, this category I keep mentioning, is everything in between. And this, yeah, which means you can get a kind of totally wide range of flavors, totally kind of, yeah, it's a real complex and kind of interesting category. And autumn tends to be the big season for oolong. So it's certainly kind of diving into, yeah, the Wuyi Mountains, back into Taiwan, places like that.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's absolutely fascinating. Yeah, I definitely feel a bit more educated on it all. It's great. So just remind us of the website then, where we can see all your lovely teas and your various teaware and the sparkling tea, of course.
And the sparkling tea. So we are at jingtea.com, all one word.
Brilliant. Felicity Fowler, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Jenny.
We do have a competition to win some Jing tea and one of their lovely glass tiers, as they're called. That's a new word for me. So make sure you have a look at thesoberclub.com and my other website, imperfectlynatural.com, where there's loads of competitions. My platinum awards are happening at the moment. That's to raise awareness of the best in natural and organic products and services. So if you're interested in all of that stuff, like, why would you not be? We've got a pop-up shop starting from the 13th of September at Hello Love, which is the fabulous little design studio and vegan cafe in Bloomsbury. So if that's something that if somewhere you can make it to, then do pop along and have a look at some of the awards entries. It's a great chance to actually see some of these amazing natural and organic products for yourself. And our awards announcement will be on the 15th of September. There's a nice feature this week in My Green Pod magazine out with The Guardian on Friday the 3rd. highlighting some of the products in the awards as well. What else to tell you? Sober by the Sea. We have a date, 25th of September. It's not full yet. There's a few spaces. It's only tiny. But if you can make it, again, I'm a big believer the right people come. If it feels right to you, if it resonates, then get in touch. It's all about visioning the new you. Doesn't matter if you're sober curious right now or if you've been sober for ages, you might want to have a think about what's for the future for you. And we look at the resources that you can find for yourself, what you can focus on, the self-care piece. We create a little vision board for your future. So check that out. Again, that's if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events. And we have another Champneys retreat coming up. We've got one in September that's sold out. Then we have one in November. I think it's November 20th and 21st. That's at Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. And another in January if you want to book ahead and give yourself that post-Christmas motivational boost. So make sure you share the podcast, tell your friends about it, follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. Of course, check out thesoberclub.com and please wish us happy birthday on Tuesday. That would be great on social media. I'd appreciate that. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.